Chapter 13. Sorsha and I managed to put together a fish stew of sorts using some supplies from the underground home, the herbs and spices in the treehouse cabinets, and our own dwindling collection of supplies. We took turns at the little stove and patrolling the deck to scan for strangers, but no one appeared to try to dislodge us from our hiding spot, and the treehouse started to smell rather delicious. When Darwin reappeared the first time, he had a small hand-pulled wagon that he asked me to help load. He then returned to the trees with the wagon in tow and without any explanation, though he walked off with most of our gear and supplies and all the guns. He returned the second time without the wagon or its contents and still refused to say where he had taken everything.
"Trust me," he replied when I tried to grill him. "After we visit the town tonight, I've got a new camp we can move to that won't bring any trouble down on McGraw. By the way, that stew smells pretty good."
"You sound like you're expecting us to get caught," I pointed out.
"I always expect the worst," Darwin asserted. "Helps me stay prepared."
"And if we don't run into any problems?" I asked.
"We can come straight back here," Darwin replied.
"Dinner's just about ready. There isn't any bread, but I found a box of crackers in your old house that we can use instead."
We gathered around the tiny table after that and ate quickly. I've never been much of a cook, but the fresh salted fish survived our ministrations, as did the potatoes, onions, and carrots. The fish was flaky and tender, with only a hint of fishiness, and the dried lemon peel that Sorsha had found gave it a nice zing. We all slurped the last few drops from our bowls, then glanced out the windows toward the lake.
"Sun will be down soon," Darwin pointed out as we started to clean up. "We should start walking toward the town once we've finished with this. We don't want to get there too late, or we'll draw more attention to ourselves than we want. I brought the Glock, just in case. You might want to create one as well."
I nodded, and once we had the treehouse back in order, I pictured the Glock in my hand. There was a brief tingling sensation, and then I felt the pocked surface of the grip in my hand. I inspected the gun for a moment, but when I caught Darwin's glance, I quickly searched for the safety. I muttered as I studied the weapon.
"It's okay," he finally said with a smile. "The safety on a Glock 19 is built in the trigger. No switches for you to press. See that little lever on the trigger?"
"Yeah," I said as I looked closer.
"The gun won't shoot unless you pull the trigger, so remember our safety rule."
"Keep your finger out of the trigger guard until you are ready to fire," I stated.
"Yep, it's really simple. That's why people like Glocks."
"Great," I said as I slid the pistol into my jacket pocket.
"Are we ready then?"
Sorsha asked as she pulled her jacket on. Darwin nodded, then held the door open for us. Once we were all on the deck, he closed the door and led the way down the stairs. There was just enough light left to see the trail that Darwin followed as we moved away from the lake and down a gentle slope. We passed a gap in the trees near the bottom, and I could make out the edge of a roof in the distance and hear the whinny of a horse. "Is that McGraw's house?" I asked out of curiosity.
"It is," Darwin replied. "Damn thing's big enough to hold a concert in, but he won't move. Don't know what the kids will do with it once he passes away."
The trail eventually met up with a dirt road, which I assumed led to the house. Darwin led us away from the house as the last rays of sunlight faded away and toward the speck of lights we could see coming out in the distance. The road passed through an old stone wall and an iron gate that had been built in the pre-magic days. The gate was closed, but Darwin eased it open without a sound, and we slipped through. We found ourselves on a wider road, also dirt, but crisscrossed with hoof prints and wheel ruts. It was clearly a busy road during the day, and as we drew closer to the town, we started to encounter more people, most of whom looked like they were heading home after a long day at work, but a few were drifting into town in search of entertainment. We timed it perfectly, and no one paid us any mind as we walked past the horse dealer and the old church and ventured down Main Street. We stuck to the shadows as much as possible and kept our faces hidden beneath our hats. As we neared the far end of the town near the jail, I could see a small crowd milling around nearby. A deputy stood outside the door to the police station and kept an eye on the townspeople, but he didn't make any effort to break up their gathering.
We should just go in there and get her,
I heard a man who smelled like stale beer declare.
I don't know why we have to wait for some fool mage from the Magisterium to come. It's all the same in the end. She's dead and we're safe.
As long as she's alive, there's always a chance that more mutants will come,
an elderly woman whined.
Don't forget that grandfather of hers,
a younger woman with a smirk added.
We all know he has guns.
That's all the mages really care about,
a young man with a red birthmark on his cheek snorted.
If it weren't for the guns, we could have been rid of the mutant already.
The rest of the people rumbled their agreement with that assessment as we slipped along the edge of the crowd in the shadows cast by the old church. I saw Darwin flex his hand and knew he was fighting the urge to pull out the Glock. I was, too, and I'd only met Freya a few times.
We need to figure out which cell she's in,
Darwin whispered, when we were far enough away from the crowd that we wouldn't be noticed.
And we need to know if they have any other extra security besides the guard in front.
Too bad that crowd is here, I replied. It makes it a little more difficult to get a look inside.
I'm hoping they've decided to keep all the deputies on duty in the front,
Darwin noted as he crept further down the street.
If they have, we might be able to get a better look at the other door.
We sidled down the street until we were at the back of the building. There were no windows along the wall, so we checked to make sure no one else was walking along Main Street, then darted across the backside of the jail. We waited a moment, then peeked around the corner of the building. I could see a small table, a practice ring for the deputies to work on their fighting skills, and more importantly, the door that Darwin had mentioned. We edged around the corner and approached the door slowly, but there was no sign of any other humans around. The only noise from the stables was that of the horses settling in for the night, and the shed just behind the ring was locked and shut for the night.
Oops,
Darwin muttered. The locked door opened a hair, and a light spilled around the crack. We looked frantically around the yard, then we ran toward the shed and ducked behind it just as the door opened further. A moment later, a small figure in a dark dress peered around the edge of the door, then stepped quietly into the night. I heard the door close gently behind her, and the woman started to tiptoe across the yard.
I think that's Mary Wright,
Darwin whispered. The woman had reached the back of the building, and she peered cautiously around the corner. I couldn't see much other than dark, shoulder-length hair that curled at the tips, and a slender figure that looked more girlish than womanly.
How did she get inside?
Sorsha asked. But Darwin had already stepped out from the darkness and sprinted across the yard. He grabbed Mary from behind before she could even register he was there, and wrapped a hand over her mouth while her brain tried to understand what was going on. He ran back to the shed with the young woman in his arms and deposited her in front of me and Sorsha. Her eyes were enormous, and I thought she might topple over just from the fright.
Mary, it's me,
Darwin said quietly, though he still had his hand over her mouth.
Freya's grandfather.
Mary blinked, then slowly nodded.
Please don't shout,
Darwin begged.
I just wanted to talk to you. Were you able to see Freya? How is she doing?
You have to remove your hand,
Sorsha said quietly. Darwin finally dropped his hand, then stepped around the stunned woman to stand in front of her. He grasped one of the woman's hands in his own and gave her a pleading look.
Is she okay?
He reiterated.
She's okay, I guess,
Mary answered in a breathy voice that I had to lean in to hear.
Where is she? Is she in one of the cells in the new section?
They put her in the last cell so people couldn't see her,
Mary replied with a shake of her head.
But it means she doesn't have a window, which makes her very sad.
Because losing your life wouldn't make you sad already, I thought to myself.
But why are you here? And how did you get in?
Mary looked furtively toward the edge of the building, and for a moment I thought she might make a run for it. Truthfully, I was fine with letting her go, as long as she didn't alert anyone else to our presence. She reached a decision, though, and I saw her straighten her shoulders and turn to face Darwin with a glimmer of tears in her eyes.
I asked my brother to get me in,
she admitted.
Joe?
Darwin asked as he thought for a moment.
The lawyer?
His boss was appointed to represent her,
Mary explained.
But there really isn't anything for them to do. Joe said it's just for appearances. The Magisterium has already made a decision. How did he get you inside?
Sorsha asked. Mary blinked at me and Sorsha, and I could see her frown as she tried to figure out if she knew us.
"These are friends of mine from Brook Island," Darwin finally explained. "They came here to drop off some equipment, but they stayed to try and help Freya."
"Oh,"
Mary said as her lip quivered.
"That's nice, but I don't think anyone can help her."
"Just tell us how you got inside,"
Sorsha suggested in a soothing voice.
"Joe went to talk to her again, to try to convince her to cooperate with the Magisterium. He told her that if she told them about the guns you have on the property, they might exile her instead of executing her."
"I doubt they'd keep that deal," I muttered as I tried to sort through all the pronouns in her statement.
Mary let out a pitiful mewl when I said that, and both Sorsha and Darwin gave me a warning look.
"Please, keep talking,"
Sorsha urged.
"Joe said I was there as his assistant,"
Mary replied after a sob.
"Everyone knows I sometimes help him around the office."
"And they say you do a good job of it,"
Darwin replied, though I thought what he really wanted to do was grab the girl by the shoulders and shake her.
"So, when are the mages from the Magisterium expected to arrive?"
Sorsha continued.
2 days,
Mary sighed.
"I don't know why it's taking so long. Medric said they're very busy for some reason."
"Are they still looking for a black mage?"
Sorsha pressed.
"I'm not sure,"
Mary admitted.
"Medric made it sound like that part was just made up, and they think Freya and her grandfather are really to blame for everything."
"They've been looking for an excuse to come after me. I can't believe they'd use my granddaughter just to get to me."
"It's the guns," I noted. "That's what they really fear."
"Oh, that's so true,"
Mary exclaimed in a voice that became even quieter as she got more excited.
"You should hear Medric talk about guns. He's terrified of them."
"Well, I'm glad you were able to see her. I didn't realize you two even knew each other."
"Oh, well,"
Mary stammered, and she again glanced toward her escape route.
"You two were friends,"
Sorsha stated.
"And I would guess it started not long after she moved here."
Darwin squinted at Sorsha and then at Mary, who'd looked like she'd just been told the world would end in the next 5 minutes.
"How did you know?"
Mary asked so quietly that I had to hover over her just to hear her voice.
"Freya doesn't like to be around a lot of people, but she does like having friends,"
Sorsha replied.
"And as much as she loves her grandfather, she would want someone closer to her own age that she could talk to about certain things."
Darwin started to protest, but Sorsha shot him a warning glance, and he fell silent.
"That's so true,"
Mary agreed.
"I met her by accident, really. I mean, I'd heard that Mr. Darwin's granddaughter was here, but I didn't really think I would meet her. I just went to the pond to think, and then I saw the little road that led to the house, and I just started to walk down the road because, well, I just did."
"And Freya met you at the old house?"
Sorsha guessed.
"Well, she told me she had been following me the whole way, but she didn't show herself until I was at that old shack,"
Mary explained.
"She wasn't very nice at first, but I told her I could come back and visit. We'd always meet at the pond after that, away from the dock so nobody would see us if they came along."
"That's very nice of you,"
Sorsha said in a kind voice.
"I'm glad you decided to be her friend," Darwin conceded. "And that you're still her friend, despite what people are saying about her."
Tears started to pour down Mary's cheeks then, and her whole body started to shake. Sorsha wrapped an arm around Mary's shoulders, and Mary only just managed to stifle a sob by placing her fist against her mouth.
"I had no idea she had such a good friend here," Darwin said quickly. "I'm so sorry you have to go through this."
But you don't understand,"
Mary stammered.
"This is my fault."
"Whatever are you talking about?"
Darwin asked in surprise.
"How could any of this be your fault?"
Mary gulped, then turned her frightened eyes on Sorsha.
"Go on and tell him,"
Sorsha urged.
"I knew Freya was a mutant,"
Mary began.
"She told me about 2 months after we met. She even let me touch her ears and her tail. I just thought it was the coolest thing ever, and I didn't understand how she could be this evil creature."
"Oh no,"
Darwin muttered as he lowered his head. Mary looked at the ex-trooper with a mix of uncertainty and fear. But Sorsha gave her shoulders a reassuring squeeze, and Mary drew a deep breath.
I asked Medrick about mutants,
Mary continued in a shaky voice.
I asked him how he could be so certain that all mutants are bad. He told me that it was because eventually they all turn into animals, but they can remember what it was like to be human, so then they get angry and attack.
That's not true, I assured her.
I didn't think it was true,
Mary sighed.
It just didn't make any sense. But I said, okay, and then Medrick asked if I knew any mutants.
Is that when you told him about Freya?
Darwin demanded. His voice had shot up, and I had to place a hand on his arm to remind him where we were. He drew a calming breath, but I could still feel the tension in his bicep.
No, no,
Mary said quickly.
But see, Freya snuck into town to see me this morning. She only does that when she has really big news.
And what did she tell you?
Sorsha asked quietly.
She said she'd had a big fight with her gramps,
Mary replied.
She said she was leaving and going west with some new friends. Oh, is that...
She did ask to come with us,
Sorsha admitted.
She was so angry, but I begged her to stay anyway,
Mary sighed.
She's the only real friend I've ever had. I didn't want to lose her.
Then how did Medrick find out about her? I pressed.
She kept talking about how she could finally be her real self when she made it to the West Coast,
Mary explained.
And how it would be nice to be finally free of all the horrible people around here. I tried to tell her she should stay, but she wouldn't listen. Then, when I said I would go with her, she laughed and said I would probably be killed before we even reached the old Penn border. I was so angry with her then. She just laughed again and said she had to go find her new friends.
So she started to walk toward the town, I surmised.
But she avoids the roads and she always uses a circle route so she can check to see if she's being followed,
Mary continued.
So I ran ahead and found Medrick and told him I knew a mutant and I knew she was heading to town and where she was coming from. I thought they would just send her away. I didn't think they would kill her.
God almighty,
Darwin swore beneath his breath. Where did you think they would send her? I asked.
I don't know,
Mary admitted.
Joe said they have reservations where they keep mutants once they finish turning into animals. I guess I thought they'd send her off to one of those.
But you said you don't believe that's what happens to mutants, I pointed out.
But they send them somewhere. I mean, they must, right?
They do,
Sorsha replied.
But they're not very nice places.
Mary looked like she was about to start sobbing again, so Sorsha pulled her into a tight hug that left Mary's face pressed against the Irish woman's shoulder.
Charles, I murmured, when I saw the look of rage that crossed his face. I'm fine,
he snapped, as he forced his eyes away from Freya's one-time friend and toward the cell block that held his granddaughter.
I can help you if you've come to get her out,
Mary declared as she pulled away from Sorsha.
We just came to look at the building, maybe peek in the window and see how she was doing. We were also hoping for news on her case, and you've already given us that.
I tried to get Joe to do more, and I do think he wants to help her. He doesn't think she's going to turn into a vicious animal either. But it doesn't matter how good an argument he puts forward. They've already made up their minds. All they really want are the guns. And then Joe says they'll have to kill her, because that's the penalty for owning a gun.
But no one's been executed for gun possession in a very long time, at least not officially,
Sorsha mused.
I wonder why Medrick is so determined to carry through with this.
You should hear him talk about guns,
Mary gulped.
They sound so scary and terrible. And he says that the only reason anyone would have a gun is to shoot mages. And where would we be if all the mages were gone?
In a normal world, Darwin snorted.
Oh,
Mary murmured as she really looked at Darwin for the first time. She had probably never thought about the thousands of years that humans had existed without magic, and I could almost see the idea start to churn slowly in her brain.
What can you tell us about the police? I asked before Mary lost herself in the possibilities of a magic-free world.
They're very nice,
Mary replied with a puzzled expression.
I mean, where are they in the building? I explained. Is someone always in the back, near Freya's cell, or do they stay near their desks?
No one's back there all the time,
Mary said.
But someone goes back every hour or so just to check on her. Mostly they stay near the front. The chief is very concerned about someone trying to break in and hurt her.
At least that gives us time, Darwin groused.
I really would like to help,
Mary added.
I could keep the police busy. I could tell the police I saw another mutant and send them away from here.
That's very nice, Mary, but we wouldn't want you to get in any trouble. We'll take it from here.
But...
Mary started to protest.
You should go home now,
Sorsha suggested in her hypnotic voice.
We wouldn't want your family to worry about you and wonder why you haven't made it home yet.
I should go home,
Mary said after a moment.
Before my parents start to worry.
You'll tell them you walk slowly and try to avoid the crowds,
Sorsha continued.
Because you didn't want them to see you crying. That's why it took you so long to get home.
I don't want the crowds to see me crying,
Mary agreed as she kept her teary eyes on the Irish mage.
You won't tell anyone you saw us,
Sorsha added.
Oh, I'd never tell anyone I saw you,
Mary declared in the loudest voice she'd used yet.
Go home, Mary,
Sorsha commanded. Mary smiled at the three of us, then skipped across the yard and peered around the edge of the jail. A moment later, she slipped off into the shadows and was gone.
I should have known she'd go looking for friends,
Darwin sighed. Well, we know which cell she's in now, and we also know how much time we have, I pointed out, and all because of that friend.
Who also happens to be the one who put her there, Darwin sniped.
I don't think she really considered the consequences. She's still very immature in a lot of ways.
You wouldn't know it to look at her, but she's almost the same age as Freya, Darwin conceded. In the old days, she probably would have been diagnosed with autism or some such.
That's probably why Freya thought she could trust her, I mused. Swear her to secrecy, just like we used to do when we were kids, and she wouldn't tell a soul about knowing Freya, or that she was a mutant.
And then Freya announced she was leaving, and leaving Mary to fend for herself again.
So she did what kids always do. She did the one thing she knew would hurt Freya. She turned her in.
I so want to hate that girl right now, Darwin sighed. But I can't.
We have the information we need. We should get out of here ourselves so we can work on our plans.
We moved to the edge of the jail just as Mary had, though we didn't skip across the packed dirt. Darwin peered around the edge of the building first, then moved quickly back toward Main Street. Sorsha went next, and then I brought up the rear. I was surprised to see that the crowd had grown just in the time that we had spent behind the jail. There was no longer an easy way to slip along the sidewalk without bumping into people, so we would have to push our way through if we wanted to reach the other side of the town. I suggest we take the roundabout way back, I muttered.
I'm not ready to leave, Darwin replied. I want to make sure that this crowd doesn't attack Freya.
Do you trust the deputies?
Sorsha asked.
Yes, Darwin admitted after a pause. The chief runs a tight ship. He won't let the mob take her.
Then we should go make our own plans, and clearly we'll need to account for the crowd as well.
I wasn't sure Darwin would walk away from the police department, but he nodded a moment later and then led us along Main Street toward Lewistown Road rather than back toward the far end of the street. We had just passed the last lamppost when he turned onto a small dirt road that didn't even rate a signpost. It was a dark, lonely stretch, and the few buildings I could pick out were shuttered for the evening. But the road soon curved back to parallel Main Street, and the businesses gave way to a few homes with lights in the windows, and then a busier section where an inn, a saloon, and a brothel crouched on the same corner. There were plenty of people moving between the three buildings, but everyone deliberately avoided looking too closely at the other people on the street. We made it past the last of the brothel crowd when our luck ran out. Two deputies strode down the road, though no one seemed to find that odd. I'd hoped they would pass us by without any comment, but something about our group must have caught their attention. One of the deputies, a slender woman with close-cropped blonde curls, stopped as we passed each other and turned to watch us.
Charles!
She called out in a commanding voice.
Oh, crap,
Darwin muttered.
That woman would have found Waldo every time.
Charles,
the woman repeated, even though the three of us kept moving. I heard her and her partner start to walk toward us, and I hesitated for a moment as my hand slipped toward the pocket where I'd stowed the Glock.
You two keep going, Charles said under his breath. Pretend you're not with me.
Sorsha and I kept moving as Darwin turned around.
Charles Darwin, I knew it was you,
the deputy stated, though she didn't sound very happy about her discovery.
Couldn't resist trying to get a look at your granddaughter, could you?
Other people had stopped nearby to watch the unfolding drama, so Sorsha and I stopped as well. The woman deputy was focused on Darwin, but her partner scanned the streets, and I realized he was searching for us. I pulled Sorsha into the darkened entryway for a paint store and peered over the shoulders of the people who stood in front of us.
What do you want, Lucille?
Darwin asked in a tired voice.
Haven't you taken enough from me?
Sorry, Charles,
Lucille replied, and she did sound sad.
But we have orders to arrest you as well.
Without a single shred of evidence, he remarked.
You know the drill,
she commanded.
Keep your hands where I can see them.
Charles raised his hands over his head, and for a moment it looked as if he would be arrested. Lucille's partner moved toward Charles with a pair of handcuffs, but as he reached for Charles's wrist, the old man dropped to a crouch and kicked out. The deputy tumbled backward as he tried to regain his balance, but Charles was already on his feet and sprinting down the road. Lucille started to blow on a whistle and then took off after him.
What do we do?
Sorsha asked as the crowd poured into the street to watch the chase. I'd kept my eye on the second deputy, and once he steadied himself, he didn't leap after his partner like I had expected. Instead, he scanned the crowds again, and I saw his eyes land on Sorsha. Get moving, I urged, as I started to push our way through the gawkers.
You!
The second deputy called out.
Stop where you are!
Neither of us stopped, and the second deputy didn't bother to call out again. I heard the tweet of his whistle as we made it to the edge of the crowd, and then Sorsha and I ran down the road after Darwin and Lucille. It wasn't hard to tail Darwin since Lucille kept blowing on the whistle. It was a clever, albeit annoying, way of letting her fellow deputies know where she was, which also meant more members of the Motown Police Department would soon join the chase. The only thing that worked in our favor was that we were soon far enough away from the town that we were all running in the same dark expanse. The moonlight was muted, so the buildings and trees were little more than black smudges against a blacker sky. I no longer had any idea of where we were or where we were going, but I followed Lucille's whistle until it suddenly went silent. Sorsha and I both stopped when the whistle abruptly cut off and waited to see what would happen next. We were both breathing heavily, and I could see the little clouds that our breath made in the cold air. When nothing happened, we took a few more steps forward and then started running again when we heard a whistle behind us.
Over here!
Darwin called out. We stopped again and looked around, and I finally spotted the ex-trooper behind a weird pre-magic statue of a man with dark red hair and a yellow onesie.
There's an old trail we can use,
Darwin whispered when we joined him.
We'll collect our gear, then head to the next camp.
Where's Lucille?
Sorsha asked as she peered around the parking lot.
She'll be fine, Darwin noted, though she'll have one hell of a headache when she wakes up.
The whistles were drawing closer by that point, so Darwin ran across the parking lot, past a pair of pre-magic buildings, then disappeared from view completely. Sorsha and I gaped at each other as we ran after him, then stopped when we suddenly found ourselves on the edge of an old gully. We could just see Darwin's figure as he ran along the cracked concrete, and I wondered how a 70-something-year-old man could keep up this pace. I didn't have time to consider it any further as the whistles closed in on the statue. Sorsha and I scrambled down the edge of the gully, taking out a few shrubs and rocks as we slid down the side. Then we ran in the direction we'd seen Darwin take. It was nearly 20 minutes before we saw Darwin again. He had climbed out of the gully and sat on the edge where he could see anyone else who might be behind him. He held up a hand when he saw the two of us, then watched as we stopped beneath him and tried to catch our breaths.
Haven't heard any whistles in a while, I managed to get out. They'll stick to the road for a few minutes yet,
Darwin declared as he helped Sorsha climb out of the gully.
How far to your next camp?
Sorsha asked when she was at the top.
I'm assuming that's where we're going, since we did indeed find trouble tonight.
It's not that far, Darwin assured her. And it'll be a lot easier on the knees from this point on.
Well, that's good to know, I replied, as I finally reached the edge and pulled myself onto the soil. Darwin set off again, though at least he was walking rather than running. I couldn't tell where we were, but there didn't seem to be any buildings nearby, not even the run-down remains of the pre-magic Morristown. I was surprised then when I suddenly spotted the stone wall that ran around the McGraw property. We weren't near the gate, though, and Darwin didn't move toward the wall like I had expected him to. Instead, he veered off into a cluster of dead pine trees that had been taken over by a creeping vine.
"Meet our ride," Darwin declared, as Sorsha and I picked our way through the vines.
Darwin stood by a brown tarp that had been thrown over something boxy and about as tall as me. With an unexpected flourish, he yanked the tarp to reveal a pre-magic car. Except it wasn't a car, or at least not the kind that I had seen before. It wasn't completely enclosed, though there was a metal frame around the seats and the steering wheel. There were only two seats, and behind that, a storage area of sorts that jutted out past the back tires. A smaller tarp had been tied down over the storage area, and Darwin lifted a corner to show us that our gear had all been safely stowed.
"What is it?"
Sorsha asked as she took in the black and gray vehicle.
"An ATV, Darwin said with a grin. "An all-terrain vehicle. I had to convert it to run on vegetable oil, but it still works, and it'll get us to our destination tonight while the rest of the police force is still chasing their tails."
"Club Car X," I read aloud as I stood in front of the ATV.
"Yep," Darwin agreed. "The 1550. It'll handle just about any terrain. People tend to underestimate them because they usually think of golf carts when you say club car, but this beauty has outlasted a lot of the others."
"It only has two seats,"
Sorsha pointed out as she looked doubtfully at the ATV.
"Well, either one of you will have to sit on the other person's lap, or someone can ride in the back," Darwin replied. "I'll let you two decide."
Sorsha and I looked at each other as Darwin took the seat behind the steering wheel, then pulled a key from his pocket. He inserted the key in a slot near the wheel, then turned it. The ATV sputtered for a moment and then started to make a humming noise. It wasn't high-pitched exactly, and it definitely didn't sound natural. I slid into the second seat, and Sorsha climbed up onto my lap. She grabbed a hold of the frame as well as the metal armrest that nestled against me as tightly as she could. All I could see was a mane of golden hair and Darwin's grin if I turned my head. The ATV started forward and just squeezed between a pair of beetle-infested trees. One side scraped against the last bits of bark, and then we were through and on the road. We bounced along as the ATV picked up speed, and I found myself craning my head sideways to avoid the onslaught of hair in my face.
"Let's see them catch this,"
Darwin chortled as we barreled off into the night.